Week 130 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. We are less than 2 weeks away from the much sought-after start date to college football, specifically in the Big Ten and the Pac-12. They're going to be starting up pretty soon here as well. But as it relates to Iowa football, Big Ten football is set to kick off October 23rd, not the 24th. We got confirmation on a Friday game to start things off on Friday the 23rd, Wisconsin and Illinois. They'll start things off as just a couple days ago, we got a new schedule. Actually, yesterday, Monday morning, we got a new schedule from the Big Ten. And this was, of course, was not an opponent schedule because we already know the schedules for each of the 14 Big Ten teams. But we did get all the Week 1 start times as well as the TV stations for Week 1 games. And we also got some other notable announcements, including Iowa-Nebraska. That game will be on Black Friday, as many of us expected. Of course, before the season began back in August, we thought that game, Iowa-Nebraska, was not going to be on Black Friday, even though it's been played on Black Friday for, what, the last 10, 11 years. But this was the first season that Iowa was scheduled to play Wisconsin last instead of Nebraska. But because of the COVID situation, and remember that the Nebraska AD is different than the Nebraska AD that didn't want that game on Black Friday anymore. So that game, I believe, is going back to Black Friday moving forward, but this year was supposed to be the 1 year where it was played on a non-Black Friday date. But as a result of this pandemic and the schedule changes, Iowa is going to get that game after Thanksgiving this year. Of course, it won't be the last game of the year. That will still be Wisconsin, which I think will be great. But the tradition of the Black Friday game for Iowa stays intact. We did not get a kickoff time for the Nebraska game. We do know that that game will be on either FS1 or FS1 or Fox, regular national Fox. We also got word that Iowa will play another Friday game, and that is Iowa at Minnesota. That game in November will be on FS1 at 6 p.m. Central Time. Friday night. So we expected, a possibility of Iowa playing a couple Friday games. I kind of predicted prior to this release that Iowa would probably just get scheduled that Black Friday game, but no, they get two Friday games, which I thought was interesting. When you look at the entire Big Ten, let me pull up the schedule here, the announcements from Monday. I thought it was interesting. The Big Ten was not very consistent. They were not very. They didn't spread the wealth, so to speak, with this schedule. Iowa gets two Friday games, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, let me count up these games again. I think every opponent but one, competitor but one in these Friday night games scheduled for this year are from the West, the Big Ten West. A little bit odd. Again, not much consistency there from the Big Ten, although I think we've learned that the Big Ten is not the epitome of consistency. We've learned that over the past couple of months. So here's the schedule. Let's run through the Friday games first. Of course, this Friday we've got the first Friday, October 23rd, we've got Illinois at Wisconsin, 7 p.m. Central Time on Big Ten Network. Friday the 30th of October, Minnesota at Maryland. 6:30 p.m. on ESPN. Friday, November 3rd. So there's not a Friday game on the 6th, but then on Friday the 13th, you've got Iowa at Minnesota, which is at 6 p.m. on Fox Sports 1. Friday, November 20th, you've got Purdue at Minnesota. That game, no kickoff time yet on Big Ten Network. Friday, November 27th, we mentioned it, Black Friday, Iowa, Nebraska in Iowa City. Fox or FS1, no kickoff time there as well. We do have an announcement on the Michigan-Ohio State game. That's the only other. It's interesting, the Big Ten, of course, they know what they've got in that game as far as TV revenue and attention, national attention. That game was the only non-Friday or Week 1 game that was announced. So in other words, no other games no other Saturday games besides week one games have been set as far as kickoff times or TV stations, but the Michigan-Ohio State game for December 12th has been. That game will be at 11 a.m. Central Time on Fox. No surprises there. Fox has carried that game in their early slot for the last couple of years. So, again, Michigan-Ohio State, 11 a.m. Fox on Saturday, December 12th. But, again, going back to the Friday games, Illinois-Wisconsin, both teams in the West. Minnesota-Maryland, one of those teams in the West. Iowa-Minnesota, both teams in the West. Purdue-Minnesota, both teams in the West. Nebraska-Iowa, both teams in the West. So, I don't understand. Is Ohio State, are Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Rutgers, Penn State, Indiana, are all those teams immune to Friday night games? I don't understand it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Of course, a lot of people have been against Friday night games because people feel that Friday night should be set aside for high school football. I understand that, but this season's going to go past the high school schedule, so I don't think it really matters this year. I kind of thought when this came out, I thought, well, that's not really fair to a lot of these Midwest states and these Midwest schools that do value those Friday night games, because let's be honest, out at Rutgers and New Jersey, I mean, how much are Rutgers fans really going to complain about having to play Friday? If anything, it's going to get them more exposure and perhaps do better for their recruiting. I'm surprised with the fact that, again, you count these up, 9 of the 10 teams involved in Friday night games that are currently scheduled are from the West. I just don't see how that's fair. Maybe you say, well, what's it matter? Well, it is a shortened preparation week. I'm sure Kirk will say that. I guarantee you Kirk will say that, especially when it gets brought up to him. Of course, he's used to it with the Iowa-Nebraska game, but two Friday night games for Iowa, and then you look at Minnesota. Minnesota's got two games. Or excuse me, Minnesota's got three games on Friday nights. Now, that's just odd. That's just weird. I don't understand it. October 30th, Minnesota at Maryland. November 13th, Iowa at Minnesota. Purdue at Minnesota, November 20th. So that week, they won't have a shortened preparation week because they played the Friday before. But you've got the Minnesota at Maryland game. Then they play a Saturday. And then Iowa at Minnesota is another Friday. So they just keep getting these weird preparation weeks. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into that too much and it doesn't really matter. But I guess it is what it is. We know for Iowa, they will play Minnesota on November 13th at 6 p.m. on FS1, and we know they'll play Friday, November 27th, which is Black Friday, on either Fox or FS1. I would guess that game will not be a night game. I would think the Big Ten would try to avoid scheduling night games as the season progresses, although they scheduled Iowa at Minnesota November 13th at 6 o'clock at night, up in Minneapolis on Fox Sports 1, which is not a dome, as we know. It's TCF Bank Stadium. I almost wonder if Minnesota could get... I think there's still a dome up there, right? Vikings play in a dome, I think. I mean, you'd think... I would think that they could figure out a way to get that game in a dome if they had to. November. I mean, middle of November, do you really want to be playing a night game middle of November? I mean, I know the NFL does it. I don't know. Again, maybe I'm reading too much into it. It just seemed like a little bit of an odd choice for a Friday game in November. I would think you'd try to avoid, especially since Minnesota has two other... I mean, heck, two of the Minnesota games that are on Friday evenings are in Minneapolis in November. It just seems odd. I don't think the Big Ten is taking weather into account very much with this. And maybe that'll help Iowa. I mean, obviously, Iowa's got some talented wide receivers, but if you're going to play in really cold weather, perhaps snowy weather, you need to be able to run the football. And the best receiver in the Big Ten, I think it's pretty clear the best receiver in the Big Ten is at Minnesota, Rashad Bateman, who was able to opt back in, receive clearance from the NCAA. So maybe that plays into Iowa's hands a little bit. I don't know. Tyler Goodson, I don't know really know what. I don't know if they still have Ibrahim up there at Minnesota. I haven't looked up and down their roster recently. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, again, Iowa's going to have a situation here where you're going to have to run the football well. And Iowa has not done that historically under Ferentz as much as people think they have. The perception is Iowa is just a ground and pound team. They found a way to win games consistently without really running the ball consistently. And that needs to change this year, especially with the colder weather, especially with the fact that they are going to have to play in colder climates. At Minnesota, you can say, well, it's not much of a colder climate. It can get considerably colder up in Minneapolis sooner than it does down here in Iowa. So that's a factor. We did have week one starting times, kickoff times announced as well. Here's the schedule for Saturday, October 24th. We already mentioned the Friday night game with the Illini in Wisconsin, which I find very intriguing. Illinois, of course, knocked off Wisconsin last year. And Wisconsin, let's not forget, Wisconsin is without Jack Cohn for that first game, or we assume he's without Jack Cohn. That's something we have not been able to talk about in the podcast, but their starting quarterback, Jack Cohn, out with a foot injury right now. Graham Mertz, the five-star kid, expected to be the starter if Cohn misses time. We have no idea how much time Cohn may or may not miss, but to get get that Friday night game slightly earlier than you anticipated. I mean, I know Friday to Saturday is not a huge difference, but that's one less day for the five-star kid who's never taken a snap, I don't believe. And maybe he has, I don't know, but he's never played considerable downs. That's one less day for him to prepare. So that will be intriguing. But other games that weekend, Saturday, October 24th, Rutgers at Michigan State, 11 a.m. That game will be on the Big Ten Network. Nebraska at Ohio State. Poor Cornhuskers will have to play at the Horseshoe week one. That game will be at 11 a.m. on Fox. Penn State at Indiana. Underrated game of the week for me. Penn State at Indiana. Indiana is a scary, scary team right now. A team nobody's talking about. We forget the fact that they went, what, 8-4, 9-4 last year. That is a good football team. And I'm telling you, people wanted to dog on the Big Ten for scheduling Wisconsin. One of their crossover games is Indiana instead of one of the big boys. Well, Indiana might be better than people think. And Penn State better watch out week one. We've seen teams in the Big 12. We've seen teams in the SEC slip up early here against opponents you wouldn't expect them to lose to. Indiana's better than a lot of those opponents that have beaten LSU, have beaten, who else has lost in the SEC and the Big 12? Oklahoma. We saw Oklahoma lose to Kansas State. I mean, the Indiana has a chance in this game, and it'll be interesting to see what they do. That'll be at 2:30 p.m. on Fox Sports 1. And then, of course, the game everybody cares about, Iowa-Purdue in West Lafayette. I'm not calling this my underrated game of the week because I'm going to hype it up all the way until that game. That is one of the tougher games on the Iowa schedule. There's no question about it. One of the toughest. I would actually rate this tougher than at Minnesota. I know Minnesota's ranked higher, projected higher. That's why I'm scared of this Purdue game, because I think a lot of people are overlooking Purdue. They get David Bell, Rondell Moore, who have both burned Iowa at times, back. Not to mention their head coach, Jeff Brohm, who's repeatedly found ways to burn Iowa and burn Iowa's secondary. Phil Parker said last week during his media availability that the secondary is his primary concern right now. It's not the linebackers, despite Iowa's loss of Dylan Doyle, Christian Welch, and Jamin Colbert. It's the secondary. And Purdue's probably the last team you want to go up against if you're concerned about your secondary. And they have to play in week one at Purdue. Now, again, crowd is probably not going to be much of a factor. I don't know how much this artificial crowd noise is really playing a role in these games. But that's not a team you want to play week one, and it's also not a team you want to play when it's warmer. And I'm not saying October 24th is going to be warm. We have no idea. But wouldn't you rather play Purdue in December or late November? Because they are going to be an aerial attack. Jack Plummett, quarterback, proved his worth last season. He wasn't great, but he's going to only improve. And you get just two monster, as far as production receivers, and Bell and Moore back. That's a scary game. I'm not going to make my pick right here. We'll save that for our preview podcast, which is coming up this coming weekend. We are recording it with our entire crew. Alex Bratta and the Crew Cobra Boys will be here. We will break everything down for the season ahead. But again, that's a scary game. 2:30 p.m. Big Ten Network on the 24th. A couple other cool games on Saturday. Michigan at Minnesota. That's going to be a fun one. 6:30 p.m. Central Time on ABC. Good on the Big Ten for getting that first week, getting an ABC primetime game. You know, television windows we kind of thought would be hard to come by for the Big Ten. And, you think, well, maybe that's why they had to play all these Friday games. Remember, they were planning on playing Friday games anyways. I wouldn't be surprised if it was sort of a mix of the fact that, yeah, TV windows were somewhat limited, and the Big Ten wants to start this tradition of Friday night games. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet, but that's what they want to do. So good on the Big Ten for getting this game on Saturday night on ABC. Again, Michigan at Minnesota, and it's great. I think it's great for college football. The Big Ten canceling and then deciding to play after all. I mean, that whole saga was national headlines, and to me, this is the best thing you can do for college football is highlight the Big Ten their first week of the season, which is probably halfway through a lot of these team seasons. So again, Michigan-Minnesota will be a fun one. And then the final game Saturday on BTN, 6:30 p.m., Maryland at Northwestern. So, you know, I'm going to be watching all kinds of Big Ten football that first day because how long have we not had Big Ten football? I mean, it's been – when we kick off October 24th, it will have almost been a calendar year. You go another month, it will have almost been a calendar year because Iowa's last Big Ten game was Minnesota in late November last year. So this is going to be fun, and at least we have something to look forward to, the Big Ten leaking the schedule or releasing the schedule this week. And again, I think the underrated game of the week is the Penn State at Indiana game, and Illinois-Wisconsin could be tricky. I would not be shocked to see Wisconsin lose that game. I'm not saying they're going to. We have no idea what Wisconsin's going to look like. They lose Jonathan Taylor. They've lost Jack Cohn, at least for the time being. We really don't know what that team's going to look like. You know, their offensive line is usually strong, but who's their running back? I mean, who's the guy leading the charge? You think about the running backs Wisconsin's had over the years, whether it be Melvin Gordon, John Clay, I think his first name was John, Monty Ball, Jonathan Taylor. They have been just loaded at running back, and maybe they'll be loaded again this year. We don't know, but that game is going to be interesting to follow as well. Another thing we got last week, we of course got availability with the offense, the defense, and the coaches. Alex and I talked a little bit about the information that we received from the offense. Charlie Jones seems to be a name that's being tossed around a lot as a guy who's really stepped up in camp at wide receiver. If you are looking at the practice photos on a day-to-day basis, look for number 16. And that's not Terry Roberts. There is number 16 in white, and there's a number 16 in black, I believe. Look for the number 16 in black because it is interesting to watch these photos. You keep seeing Charlie Jones, you know, popping up with the number ones or the guys we assume will be the starters. So he may get some time. I mean, yeah, I get they're loaded with Tracy, Reganey, Smith, and Smith-Marset, but Iowa is, I mean, look at last year. They missed Brandon Smith for a considerable amount of time. This year, you've got COVID to think about if players are diagnosed with COVID. One player, if he's diagnosed with COVID, he's out for 21 days. So I would not be shocked to see Charlie Jones be a factor. And maybe this is why Oliver Martin decided to transfer. Because we kept thinking, well, yeah, Oliver Martin, I mean, he's behind some really good receivers, but next year he'll be in the top three because Smith, Marset, and Smith are supposed to be gone, but maybe not. Maybe he just saw the writing on the wall, and maybe Charlie Jones and Max Cooper were just outperforming him in practice, and he realized he needed to move on somewhere where he had a better chance of playing, which happens to be Nebraska. I don't know. Of course, we're speculating on this. We just heard good things from the coaching staff and the other receivers about Jones, but he'll have to prove it on the field. Other notable things, let's pull up the depth chart for Iowa. That was an interesting talking point. I know that the media loves to talk about the first depth chart, as do I. I'll be honest. I love to talk about the depth chart. But, you know, Kirk Ferentz talked about it last week. You really can't read too much into these depth charts. Why can we say that? Well, Cole Banwart isn't listed on the depth chart. And Ferentz basically said, well, Cole's probably a starter right now, but we just forgot to put him down. We forgot to list him. So if Ferentz just forgot to list Cole Banwart, that tells you he's probably not thinking too much about these depth charts. But let's run through it anyways. No surprises at wide receiver. Brandon Smith and Tyrone Tracy. Amir Smith-Marset, Nico Reganey. Left tackle, no surprise there. Alaric Jackson, Jack Plum. Those were the guys last year. Center, Tyler Linderbaum. And backing up Linderbaum, this was a bit of a surprise. We'll see if this comes to fruition or not. But Justin Britt, he's a guy that I had said I wouldn't be shocked to see him start at guard. We saw him get some run last year as a redshirt freshman. But it's interesting they've got him running at center. Maybe he's the center of the future if Linderbaum decides to go pro after this year. I thought that was interesting. I kind of expected Schott or maybe someone else, but maybe they're grooming a Brit to take over at center next year. Guard at both left guard and right guard. No surprises at right guard. Kyler Schott, the starter. Left guard, Cody Yentz. So no Kallenberger, no Banwert, although again, we don't know what to make of what Ferentz said, because Ferentz basically said, well, we forgot to put Banwert on the depth chart. So, you know, I don't know if Banwert would start at left or right guard, but right now the starters on the depth chart are Schott and Ince. I thought it was interesting, too, Noah Fenske, the redshirt freshman, is listed at backup right guard, so that's a name to watch. Iowa traditionally has guys go out at guard and well, just all across the offensive line, and they need depth at that position. So that'll be an interesting position group to follow. Noah Fenske, and then also Luke Empen. And we're going to nickname him Empanada. That's my nickname for Luke Empen. He's going to be a name to watch as well heading into week one. And you know what's the step chart I'm looking at here? This is on ourlads.com. This shows Coy Cronk at starting right tackle, but it's interesting. Let me go to the Iowa website. The depth chart they released initially listed Mark Kallenberger as starting right tackle. And if you remember on the podcast, I've been an advocate for many, many months that I thought it may be worth a look to start Kallenberger at tackle. Coy Cronk's only here for a year. Start Kallenberger at tackle, of course, if he's able, and maybe pull Cronk inside. If you know, talent at guard is lacking, pull your big boy inside and let him go to work. Maybe that, you know, again, I'm not watching these guys in practice, but let's take a look at the official Iowa depth chart on the Iowa website. I'm pretty sure Kallenberger was listed number one. I'm actually 100% sure, but yet ourlads.com lists Coy Cronk as the starter. It is interesting to note, though, and maybe this is where our lads is getting this information. Yeah, the Iowa website still doesn't even have the depth chart up. So, you know, maybe ourlads.com is looking at what Brian Ferentz said. He basically said last week that if the games were starting this week, that Coy Cronk would be the starter, which, again, I find hilarious that Iowa, the coaching staff, has basically said, we don't care what the depth chart says. We can forget guys, we can list guys in the wrong spot, and it doesn't really mean anything. I think it will be interesting to see what the depth chart says week one, because usually the depth charts game week are typically what we see game day. And there weren't a whole lot of surprises on this depth chart, especially once we heard Brian Ferentz make the comment about Coy Cronk most likely being the starter. Although, again, I go back to what I said. Mark Kallenberger, I would not be shocked to see him run at guard, and maybe you run Coy Cronk, or excuse me, run Mark Kallenberger at right tackle, and maybe you slide Cronk inside. But Kallenberger's a natural tackle. I mean, I think that's pretty much clear. Especially just his body type. I think he's more of a natural tackle than he is a natural guard. So, again, Cronk and Kallenberger listed at right tackle in whatever order you want to list them in. We shall see. A lot can change in a couple weeks as well. Tight end, no surprises. Sam Laporta, Sean Beyer. Beyer, of course, a redshirt senior, hoping for a big year from him. If they could have another even close to the production that Hockenson and Fant had, this offense could be historically good. I'm not expecting, and I'm not saying they're going to be as good as Hockenson and Fant were in their final year at Iowa, but I would not be surprised to see this be a pretty darn good tandem. But that would certainly help Iowa's running attack if they could factor in the tight ends and really open things up and give room for Goodson. And we know that Byers is a really efficient blocker on the outside, so you know he's going to help no matter what. You hope he can stay healthy. He's had some problems with injuries throughout his career. Quarterback, Spencer Petras, Alex Padilla. No mention of Deuce Hogan on this depth chart. Just two quarterbacks listed. So I would not expect to see Deuce this year. I just, again, I know they can play and maintain eligibility, but I would guess that they're redshirting the kid. The coaching staff has talked pretty highly of Alex Padilla. He's a kid who's a little bit shorter, 6'1", I believe, but he knows the system well. He's been here a couple of years, and I don't think we're going to see Hogan. I know a lot of people thought we would see him, but I think Petrus and Padilla, although again, who knows what happens with COVID? I mean, what if Padilla and Petrus both get COVID? In comes Deuce. That's just all there is to it. I mean, position group can really be decimated by this virus, whether we're talking about the virus causing serious health problems or not. Just from a purely a numbers standpoint, if you get it, you're out. You're out 21 days, and that's a huge blow to whatever position group we're talking about. Fullback Monty Potibom and Turner Palisard. No real surprises there. I'm sure that could change if Palisard outplays Potibom these next couple of weeks. Of course, they did run the fullback a lot less this past year than typical Iowa teams would. At running back, no surprises here either. Goodson, Sargent, Guyvery, Kelly Martin, all listed. At defensive end, Chauncey Golston backed up by Logan Lee. Tackle, Davion Nixon backed up by Jack Heflin and Noah Shannon. A little bit surprised to see Heflin not starting, but Ferentz has been high on Austin Schulte, who's the other starter at tackle. He's being backed. This is probably the biggest surprise. If you're going to look at it purely from a positional standpoint, this is probably the biggest surprise in the depth chart. John Wagner no longer listed at defensive end, although I think it was Phil Parker or possibly Kelvin Bell who basically said, look, we like to run our guys inside. We like to run them out. Don't read too much into, if they're at end or at tackle. So maybe not much to read into there. But John Wagner is listed as a defensive tackle. He ran at defensive end last year. So the top guys, interior line-wise on the defense, Nixon, Heflin, Shannon, Schulte, Wagner. There you got five guys. And then on the outside, I think the clear top three are Van Valkenburg, Joe Evans, Chauncey Golston. If Lee is there as well, I mean, you're looking at nine guys. I don't know how comfortable. I mean, Phil Parker said he'd like to run, I think, nine or ten guys on the defensive line. I mean, I don't know who else would potentially factor in there. But certainly that's interesting to think about. At least nine guys being able to rotate in, which typically does Iowa a lot of good. Ever since the days of Iowa having to chase around Northwestern quarterbacks, I think Phil Parker has realized having depth at line and having guys who can come in is very, very important. So that'll be interesting to follow who ends up emerging at the top. I thought Jack Heflin may, but again, Austin Schulte, a lot of good things. We're hearing a lot of good things about that young man. So we will follow that. At cash, Dane Belton is listed as the starter at cash. He's also listed at strong safety, which I found interesting. Coaches are very high on Dane Belton right now. And he's a kid who performed well last year, had some hiccups, but he was a freshman. I would not be shocked to see Dane Belton run at safety. If Iowa can get a Riley Moss or a Julius Brents, and you say, well, Corey, you can't run one of your three best cornerbacks at cash. Well, remember, Phil Parker has been a whiz at cornerback. I would not be shocked to see a guy like Terry Roberts, even a guy like, well, Dallas Cradiff is, I think, more of a natural safety, but they've recruited well at that position at cornerback. So if they can get some other guys who they're comfortable providing some depth at corner, I mean, Iowa's got three pretty darn good corners right now. I mean, heard a lot of good things about Julius Brents. Of course, we know Riley Moss and Matt Hankins are considered the starters. Those are the guys listed at number one for left and right corner on the depth chart. So maybe you can survive by sliding Brents over to cash and placing Belton back at safety. I think it'll also depend on what happens at safety. Can a Sebastian Castro, who is listed as the backup strong safety right now, can he be a guy who steps up and is an every down safety? Maybe he is. He's just a redshirt freshman. But Jack Kerner, obviously, he's going to be one of the more undispensable or indispensable, excuse me, players on this year's Iowa defense because of the fact that they're so thin at safety. And he is the starting free safety. Kayvon Merriweather is there as well. It'd be great to see Kayvon grab one of those safety spots. We keep missing Dallas Cradiff off the depth chart. Every year we talk about him, we think, well, he's going to break through at some point. He was a highly touted kid, still not showing up on the depth chart. So one of these guys, whether it be Castro, Merriweather, Cradiff, if one of these guys can step up his safety, then yeah, Belton can focus on cash. But obviously the coaching staff has a lot of confidence in Belton playing either position. So somebody's either got to step up at cash or step up at safety, and that'll kind of help the coaching staff direct Belton in the right spot as far as a position to focus on. So, but the good news is they got some flexibility there with Dane Belton. They're confident with him at either position. We mentioned cornerback Raleigh Moss, Matt Hankins, Julius Brents, Terry Roberts are the top four guys. Special teams, Torrey Taylor is listed as the number one punter. No surprises there. Ryan Gersondi has been a big disappointment. And I hate to say it for a kid who I'm sure has worked his tail off, but he's a scholarship punter, and he just cannot seem to beat whoever he's going up against, whether that be Colton Rastetter, who, let's just say, Colton had some bright moments at Iowa, but not for his punting. Okay, let's just say that. Or Michael Sleep Dalton. Michael Sleep Dalton was a solid punter last year, but again, you expect Gersondi to come in here as a scholarship punter and beat one of these guys out, and he hasn't been able to do it. We'll see what happens, but Taylor listed as the number one punter. We also saw Nick Phelps. He's probably the third guy right now, although special teams coordinator LeVar Woods acted like all three guys have a chance at factoring in there. Keith Duncan listed as the place kicker. It was tossed around that he hasn't won that job, which I find hilarious, being that he was the runner-up to the Lou Groza Award last year. Coaches are high on Shudak, and Duncan could get COVID, and it's great to have depth at kicker. And again, I go back to this ability for the coaching staff to actually exhaust an extra year of eligibility for some of these kids if these kids decide to. Ferentz mentioned last week how some kids are just ready to move on after 4 or 5 years. But I think Shudak would be a possible candidate for that, if especially if Duncan can have another Lou Groza Award type year and potentially get some draft attention. I think you go. I think you don't wait. You know, you don't waste time, even though you're a kicker. You don't waste time and miss out on the money. So if he goes to the NFL, maybe it's an extra year for Shudak, and I think that'd help both parties, both Iowa and Caleb Shudak. And then a kickoff, Shudak, we expect him to be the kicker. Austin Spiewak, the long snapper. Ryan Gersondi, the holder. I was a little bit disappointed to see what Iowa had listed at punt return. Max Cooper and Nico Reganey. Those are two guys that ran last year at punt return. Mir Smith Arset said last week that he'd be more than happy to do it, but coaches haven't been running him at that position. I just hope Cooper has improved, because Max Cooper, I thought, lacked a little bit of explosion. I think he's the safe bet there, but I think he lacked a little bit of explosion. If he can improve there, great. But I guess I was a little bit disappointed to see that someone else hadn't emerged at that position. And then at kick return, of course, we know Amir Smith-Marset. And my guess is we're going to see a lot of Ivory Kelly-Martin back there as well. Those two guys will be the primary kick returners. And that's your depth chart. I mean, again, where do you go for a major surprise? I think the my big surprise was Coy Kronk not starting, but then Brian Ferentz basically said, well, he would be the starter if we were playing today. You know, Justin Brittick at center was a nice little tidbit. John Wagner listed inside was also somewhat interesting, but I mean, let's be honest, overall, that's a pretty tame depth chart. Not a whole lot of surprises there. So, I mean, I don't know. We're going to wait and see. We're going to probably get a game week depth chart, would be my guess. The media will meet with Kirk Ferentz and some of the players on a week from today, that following Tuesday of game week. So, I mean, reactions? I don't know. I don't know if the fact that there were no surprises, is that a bad thing? Is that a good thing? I mean, that could mean that the guys that we expected to be the guys this year have just simply stepped up and done what we've expected them to do and played really well in practice and proved themselves. It also could mean that Ferentz really, really doesn't care about the depth chart and he's not really thinking too much when he's writing these. I mean, again, how do you leave Cole Banward off the depth chart? To me, that tells you that he probably wrote this on a scratch piece of paper like he has on the sidelines of each game. I don't think he's really thinking about it. And, you know, more power to him. There's no reason to give too much information to your first opponent, especially when your first opponent is one of the better teams in the West. And I think it also could just mean that nobody else has emerged, which could be a bad thing. I mean, you know, if somebody else hasn't emerged at punt return or at linebacker, which we didn't talk about linebacker, did we? That's the one position we didn't talk about. Right now, Jack Campbell and Nick Neiman are the guys. Jack Campbell, we've heard a lot of good things about him. Seth Benson and Justin Jacobs are backing him up, so no surprises there either. We didn't see Barrington Wade. I think he'll factor in as well. He was listed as the third linebacker or the cash, I believe. So, again, we'll see what happens with Dane Belton and how much 4-3 as opposed to 4-2-5 Phil Parker wants to run this year. But we'll see on the depth chart. I mean, we may get totally different information next Tuesday. And if we do, We'll talk about it. Although we will be recording our preseason show this coming Sunday, so we probably won't have anything by Sunday. I think we have an idea of what this team's going to look like. I mean, Spencer Petras is going to be the biggest question mark, I think, for most people. I know I keep saying the biggest question mark for me is interior line play, and I stand by that, specifically on the offensive side. Can, you know, a Mark Kallenberger, if he ends up getting some run at guard, can he step up? Can Cole Banworth step up? They've got Kyler Schott, Justin Britt, Cody Entz. They've got guys, but we saw a lot of struggles last year from those guys. The Paulson twins are gone. Can these guys step up? They got a lot of youth at guard, too. I mean, Cole Banward is a redshirt senior, but, I mean, look at these guys on the line. If you count tight end, you've got Sam Laporta, who's a sophomore. You've got Noah Fenske, who's a redshirt freshman, backing up Schott. Schott's a redshirt junior, but a walk-on. Linderbaum's a redshirt sophomore. Britt's a redshirt freshman. Luke Empen is a redshirt sophomore. And Cody Entz is a redshirt sophomore. And Jack Plum is a redshirt sophomore. So they've got guys in the wings that can be the future of this line. I just hope that we can see improvement. I'm a little bit concerned with the fact that this is kind of a stating the obvious comment, but I'm a little bit surprised that they are concerned that they had no spring ball to improve on the interior line. That's a concern to me. I don't know how much strength and conditioning were really affected, you know, in comparison to regular normal years. I just, again, you know, they lost that Penn State game last year. They lost a Michigan game because of interior line play. And nobody wants to talk about it, it seems like. Everybody wants to talk about the quarterback. Again, I go back to first-year quarterbacks under Kirk. Typically, they're pretty solid. They're pretty consistent. We look at the first year with Ricky Stanzi. Of course, he played in 2008, had a pretty good year. 2009 was spectacular. He went undefeated in the regular season when he was not hurt. Actually, he went undefeated. Ricky Stanzi never lost a game in 09. The only games that were lost were Vandenberg, Northwestern. Of course, Stanzi started that game, but Iowa was up, I think, what, 10-0 or something in that game. Stanzi goes down, they lose. And the Ohio State game, they lost with Vandenberg. So Stanzi was terrific year one. Nate Stanley was pretty darn good year one. Look at 2017. They beat Ohio State. They had, an 8-5 finish with a win against Boston College in the bowl game. You look at the first year with Vandenberg, although 2012 wasn't very good, 2011 wasn't too bad. I mean, they had a winning season. They weren't great. They had a winning season. Not going to, take that team to the next level, but that was a down team. They lost a lot of production after 2010. You look at Drew Tate. He was decent his first year. I mean, I think a lot of people remember Drew Tate for 2005. And, you know, again, Drew Tate wasn't terrible his first year. You look at a guy like C.J. Beathard, 2015. They go undefeated in the regular season. Of course, he played a little in 2014, even played a little in 2013. But my point is, I think Iowa can be just fine at quarterback. I think they'll be just fine at quarterback. And maybe that's naive of me to say, but my concern is the interior of that offensive line. And then, of course, special teams, you're always concerned about punter because we know how much punter can be a factor at Iowa. But up and down the – I mean, I really don't have a whole lot of concerns. And I'm being a homer. I get it. But, you know, Phil Parker really, really hyped up this linebacker crew. And that was a position group we were a little concerned about. I don't know that I'm as concerned now. He seems to really think highly of Jack Campbell. And, hey, maybe Jack Campbell – maybe Nick Niemann would have started over Colbert and Campbell would have been the starter anyways. We don't know. I mean, maybe Colbert wouldn't have started. Maybe these are the starters that you know Iowa had in mind the whole time. I don't know. But I do think Colbert's going to have a problem next year getting his job back. And maybe we can talk about that in another podcast. But I do think that's going to be a storyline to follow. Of course, we're going to break everything down this coming weekend on our official Iowa preseason football show, which is coming to you a lot later in the year than we originally anticipated. But hey, at least we get to talk football, and at least we get to watch football. This coming Saturday will be the last Saturday until, what, December 26th that we won't have Hawkeye football. And you can say, well, COVID might happen. Yeah, COVID might happen, sure. But as far as the schedule is concerned, this is the last Saturday in a while that we won't have Hawkeye football. And think about it. I mean, a little over a month, we get Iowa basketball. Of course, we talked about the podcast last week, the Iowa Gonzaga reported matchup. I mean, we'll talk about basketball. It's going to be a fun year. But again, we are so close, a week and a half away. Of course, the NBA Finals are complete. LeBron James and the Heat win over the Miami. Or excuse me, LeBron James and the Heat. LeBron James and the Lakers beat the Heat 4-2. Jimmy Butler, just an unbelievable playoff run for him, and he's a guy who. Talk about a huge get for Miami. I mean, you got to give Spoelstra a lot of credit. I know he's not the GM there, but everybody, I think, counted Miami out when LeBron left, and people kind of assumed, well, Eric Spoelstra was just I wouldn't say that the straw that stirred the drink. I'd say people actually thought of him as sort of just the filler, right, because of LeBron James being there. But he has proven to be one of the better coaches in the NBA. And, boy, the Heat, what a fun story. What a fun team to follow throughout these playoffs, because they didn't thrive off star power like the Lakers. They didn't have Anthony Davis and LeBron James. They had Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. And they played these finals. They pushed the Lakers to 6 games without Goran Dragic. So, you know, if you want to say there's an asterisk next to this year because of the bubble, that's fine. I'm not going to go that far. I think a championship's a championship, but you know, I'm not a LeBron fan, and I think what the Heat did this year was much, much more impressive than what LA did. And people know how I feel about LeBron. I miss the days of Kobe. I miss the days of Dirk, Duncan, Tracy McGrady, Dwayne Wade. I miss those days. I do not enjoy watching LeBron and AD, James Harden, Steph Curry. I do like the Mavs, Luka Doncic, Kristaps Porzingis. I like those guys. And again, I'm a homer. Yeah, I'm a Mavs fan. I've been a Mavs fan my whole life. But I'm not gonna really comment much on the Lakers' victory. I think it was good for LA. LA's had a tough year with the passing of Kobe, so good for them. But I'm not gonna go on a LeBron, you know, worshipful rant. I'm just not gonna do it. You know, I'm not going to have a comment and I have a conversation about LeBron and whether he's the best player of all time. I don't think he is. I think Michael Jordan owns that, and I think he probably will own that forever. I had a debate with someone last night about my top five. I don't have LeBron in my top five, and you may laugh at that and think that's just stupid. I've got Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain. And my fifth, I had Magic, but you probably should put Kareem in there. Probably should put Kareem in there. I think Magic and Kareem were probably the best duo ever to play, and I mean that. I know Scottie and Jordan were great, and maybe, you know, again, maybe you think that that's a stupid comment to make, but the way Magic and Kareem operated was probably the most, maybe I shouldn't say the best duo, the most unique duo ever to play the game of basketball. Of course, Larry Bird and Kevin McHale are there as well, but I'm not going to put Anthony Davis and LeBron on that level. I'm not going to put LeBron and D-Wade on that level. I'm not even going to put Kobe and Shaq on that level, but I do put Kobe in my top five. Maybe it's kind of nostalgia, especially with the fact that Kobe died the way he did this year. I mean, almost every NBA star ever to play the game of basketball is still alive. Almost everyone. I mean, Bill Russell's alive. Julius Irving's alive. Michael Jordan's alive. Magic Johnson's alive. Larry Bird, Kevin May, all these guys are alive. Kobe Bryant's not alive. So, you know, maybe there's some nostalgia there. And I would put LeBron probably at 6 or 7. And again, that's my opinion. I have a right to my opinion. You have a right to your opinion. I love it when people say, you know, this guy last night told me, well, you obviously have no idea what you're talking about. Okay. Well, that's your opinion. I have my opinion. You have yours. We all live happily ever after. I do think, if you were to have a conversation about who had the potential to be one of the best players of all time and fell short, you got to have Bill Walton in the mix. Bill Walton was one of the more dominant players ever to play the game of basketball. And if it hadn't been for nasty foot issues, I think he would have been in my top five of all time. Shaquille O'Neal is another guy. Probably should have been considered one of the best players of all time, but he was lazy. He was lazy. And you can say, well, he won how many rings? I don't care. He probably could have won double that if he hadn't been lazy, a la Charles Barkley. just watch Charles talk about it on NBA on TNT. He'll talk about it at length. But again, not downplaying what Shaq did. He was terrific, but and I'm not downplaying what LeBron has done, but he's won a lot of championships with a lot of help, and he's burned a lot of bridges doing it. And I think character should be a factor in your top five. I do. I think character should be a factor, and you can say, well, that has nothing to do with being a player. I think it does. I think it does. I think it's how you represent your franchise, how you represent the league. If you're going to talk about being one of the best players of all time, if you're going to talk about being a top five, top 10 player in the NBA, you better represent the league well. Michael Jordan represented the league well. Kobe Bryant represented the league well. Certainly Wilt Chamberlain represented the league well. Magic had his issues here and there as far as public controversy. Kareem represented the league tremendously. And you can say LeBron does. I don't think he does. I think politics are way too much a part of the NBA now. You think about what he did in announcing his decision to go to Miami by broadcasting it on ESPN in a huge event. And I'm not a Cavaliers fan, so you can't say I'm just bitter about that. To me, that was just egotistical, conceited, and pompous. So I stand by what I said. I'm not going to put LeBron in my top five. You know, maybe he works his way simply because of his who knows how many championships he can win. If the Lakers can keep AD, I mean, I think they're the favorites next year. I mean, I think the Warriors are going to be back in the conversation as well if they can get their guys healthy. But I think the Lakers are probably going to be the favorites again next year. And, you know, maybe LeBron works his way onto that conversation. But, you know, everybody's is so eager to LeBron to crown a guy who deemed himself as the king. Everybody's so eager to crown him as the best player of all time over Michael Jordan, and I think it's slanderous and I think it's pathetic. That's my opinion. Again, you have your right to yours. I have a right to mine, and I'm going to stand by that opinion. The NBA should be back within a few months. How great is that? We're going to get NBA basketball in potentially December or January. The NFL is having some COVID problems. The Titans have had numerous players and staffers test positive, which I find interesting because they tested positive right after that Vikings game and still no positives with Minnesota. So the claim that football is spreading the virus, that's been debunked a long time ago. That's been debunked, okay? None of these positive cases have been linked to any gameplay, okay? The Patriots have had positives. We see, of course, they played the Chiefs. The Chiefs have had a positive or two, I believe. But I believe the positives that the Chiefs have had have been staffers. Or maybe even a practice squad player in there. So, and the Titans are playing tonight. They're scheduled for the first Tuesday night game in, like, I don't know how long. But they are planning on playing tonight. So, I'm still not buying the football spreads the virus claim. I am buying the fact that extracurricular activities and face-to-face non-football contact does spread the virus. Because you're not wearing a face shield. You're in close proximity. You're probably indoors at bars, at parties, at clubs, wherever these guys are doing. And the NFL is currently investigating, the NFL and the Players Association is investigating the Titans to see if they indeed violated the NFL's policies. But the NBA made it the entire season without, the entire bubble season without a single positive. And yeah, I know they were in a bubble. But again, the bubble is to discipline the players away from basketball. I don't think people get that. It's to discipline players away from basketball. If you want to play the sport you love or you claim to love, you discipline yourself to stay and only associate with those on your team and those who are also competing. And that's what the NBA did. They basically forced these players to stay in this bubble. And NFL players have a decision to make. They can either go out and club and party and whatnot, or they can play football. But if you go out and club and party, you are going to spread it within your organization. But again, I've not had seen any evidence that tells me that they spread it within, you know, from team to team on the field. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the NFL. I mean, there's talk about, oh, they're going to have to shut down. I'm not buying that. We'll have to wait and see. But Titans are playing tonight. That will be an interesting game. Let's run through these scores across the world of sports as we finish up week 130 of our podcast. Haven't recorded a podcast by myself in a while. This is kind of interesting. Haven't done it in a while. I've done it before. Haven't done it in a while. Let's run through some scores in the NFL, first of all. This past weekend, what a performance for Chicago. You know, I called Chicago the, when they were, what, 3-0, I called them the worst 3-0 team in the league. I stand by that. I still don't think they're very good. I just don't. I don't think Nick Foles and Mitchell Trubisky are good enough at quarterback for Chicago to win that division, especially with how well Aaron Rodgers is playing right now. But they had an excellent win against Tampa Bay, and Wirfs had to grow up on Sunday, or on Thursday. Khalil Mack took him to school a couple times. I think that was a little bit overhyped. I didn't think Wirfs held his own a lot of that game. But Chicago found a way to win that game 20-19. Sunday, Carolina over Atlanta 23-13. How about the Raiders of Las Vegas with a huge win over the Kansas City Chiefs 40-32. The Cardinals over the Jets 30-10. The Steelers over the Eagles 38-29. The Washington football team, they fail to win with Kyle Allen, who, by the way, got hurt, and he's out now. And, boy, their quarterback, that situation there, now we're hearing rumors that Dwayne Haskins may be traded. That's a messy situation for Washington. They've already had a lot of weird stuff happen this year in addition to the pandemic. They lose to the Rams 30-10. Baltimore beats Cincinnati 27-3. Jacksonville falls to Houston 30-14. And look at this score, Miami 43, San Francisco 17. We saw the return of Jimmy Garoppolo, and after the first half, Kyle Shanahan says, we don't want Jimmy to take any more punishment. Had two picks, he was like 7 of 17. They put in C.J. Beathard. Beathard wasn't much better, but I think he threw for like 93 yards on like 9 of 18, and he threw for a touchdown. Did have a fumble late, but I mean, San Francisco's offensive line looks like a sieve right now. They can't protect their quarterback if their life depended on it. And there are some problems in San Francisco right now. They got a lot of injuries. We don't know the health of Jimmy Garoppolo. It will be interesting to see if C.J. Beathard plays, if they start C.J. this next week. I think he's the undisputed backup right now. And if he plays, it's Sunday Night Football on NBC again. So that'll be interesting to watch. The Browns beat the Colts 32-23. And the story of the week was Dak Prescott. If you didn't catch the injury, I don't encourage you to look it up on YouTube. Very, very gruesome leg injury for Dak Prescott, and a very emotional scene inside AT&T Stadium in Dallas. He is out for the season after surgery Sunday night. Definitely thoughts go off to Dak and his recovery, and we hope it will be a speedy one because he was having a very, very hot start to his season. But Dallas did find a way to beat the Giants, and the Giants found a way to lose another game, 37-34. The Seattle Seahawks beat the Vikings in dramatic fashion on a Sunday night, 27-26. And how about the Monday night game? The Saints over the Chargers, 30-27 in overtime. Boy, the Chargers just cannot close games. Should have won last night. They missed a field goal off the uprights in the waning seconds of regulation. They blew a game in overtime against the Chiefs. They just can't close games out. I think they've lost at least four games by 7 points or less. So it's been, well, I guess that's all four losses they've had have been 7 points or less. So, you know, Justin Herbert looks really good at quarterback for them. I hope they can turn things around, Desmond King and company. Let's take a look at week six, make our predictions. Of course, we got Buffalo, Tennessee tonight. We will not predict that game. I do think that that should be a fun one on CBS at 6 o'clock. But as far as week six is concerned, let's make our predictions in the world of football. Sunday night. We don't have a Thursday night game this next week. We don't have a Thursday night game. I'm not seeing a single Thursday night game scheduled. So I'm assuming there's no Thursday night game. I'm assuming that's due to COVID. Maybe I missed a postponement. I don't know. There have been postponements here and there. The NFL's changed around the schedules and whatnot. But let's make our predictions for Sunday. Houston, Tennessee, noon on CBS. I will go with Houston. I think Tennessee may be in some trouble if they lose tonight. They have a quick turnaround against Houston. They could fall to 3-2 in a hurry. I'm going to go Texans. Bengals and Colts. I like the Colts have looked like right now, and the Bengals have not looked good. Joe Burrow has not been playing well. I will go with Indianapolis. Atlanta, Minnesota. I'm going to take Minnesota. These two teams are a combined 1-9. But Minnesota should have won on Sunday night against Seattle. They look better than their record indicates, and Atlanta's just terrible. I will go with the Vikings. Broncos were off. That's the game, I believe, that got rescheduled, right? Denver and New England. I will go with New England. The Washington football team taking on the New York Giants. Another pitiful performance for Washington. These two teams are also a combined 1 and 9. I will go with Washington, Baltimore, and Philadelphia. I'm going to go the upset here. I'm going to go Philly. Carson Wentz is playing for his job right now. He's playing for a contract. I will go with the Eagles. Browns and Steelers, this is probably the game of the week. These two teams are combined 8-1, and it's a divisional battle. I will go with the Steelers, but would not be shocked to see Baker Mayfield and Cleveland step up and win this game. Carolina and Chicago also should be a good one. Carolina is outperforming what I expected them to do. They really are. They're 3-2 right now. I will go with the Panthers. I'm still not buying into the Bears. But again, this is almost a toss-up for me as well. Jacksonville and Detroit, noon on Fox. I will go with the Lions. The Jets and the Dolphins, 3:05. I will go with the Miami Dolphins. They looked better last week, but Ryan Fitzpatrick is so erratic over the course of his entire career. But I will go with the Dolphins. Tampa Bay and Green Bay should be another fun one on Fox. I will go with the Packers. Rams and 49ers. I got to go Rams, but it will be interesting to follow that game. If Beathard starts that game, that'll be fun to watch. And what a win that would be if Beathard could come in there and beat the Rams. But I will go Rams. Monday night football, we've got the Chiefs and the Bills. 4 p.m. on Fox. All these games, you're going to have some weird, oddly scheduled games this year because of these adjustments, because of COVID. I will go with the Chiefs, but I tell you, Buffalo looks good this year, and the Chiefs coming off a loss would not be surprised. It's going to be a fun. That might be the game of the year thus far, Kansas City and Buffalo. Arizona and Dallas, I will go with the Cardinals. Of course, Dak Prescott's out, and Andy Dalton expected to start for the Cowboys. Let's look at college football. Some interesting results from this past week. Let's start out with, well, how about Georgia Tech? Nice win Friday night over Louisville, 46-27. We saw more upsets on Saturday, which has become the norm. Remember how many upsets we had last year in college basketball? We're seeing a similar trend in college football this year. Number 4, Florida falls to number 21, Texas A&M, 41-38. North Carolina beat Virginia Tech, 8-19. High-scoring affair here, 56-45. We had a couple high-scoring, several high-scoring affairs this past Sunday, or Saturday, excuse me. How about this game? Quadruple overtime, the Red River Showdown, Oklahoma over number 22, Texas, 53-45, and the Big 12 is wide open now for Iowa State. Texas and Oklahoma both have two losses. This is the year, Cyclone fans. If you're going to do it now. They've certainly got some headway. They certainly do, with a win over Oklahoma, win over TCU already, and two game lead over both of those teams, Texas and Oklahoma. Tennessee, number 14 in the country, fell to number 3 Georgia, 44-21. BYU over Texas San Antonio in a close one. The 15th ranked Cougars survived, 27-20. Number 24 Iowa State over Texas Tech, 31-15. Number 13 Auburn survives Arkansas just barely, and boy, Arkansas got hosed. A late call, should have been a fumble call on just a weird play. The Auburn quarterback, Bo Nix, fumbled the snap. He was trying to spike the ball. He fumbles the snap, drops it, then picks it up, throws it backwards like a spike. Recovered by Arkansas, should have been called a fumble. They did not call it. They called it incomplete. And Auburn kicks the game-winning field goal. So hopefully, if Auburn's in the playoff conversation late in the year, I hope the committee looks back at that game, because that was Arkansas completely got hosed there. Boston College over Pittsburgh in overtime, 31-30. Number 1 Clemson blew out number 7 Miami. I don't know who's going to beat Clemson again this year. 42-17 there. Alabama, the second-ranked team in the country, 63-40. It looked like a basketball score here. But certainly Alabama, their defense looks vulnerable. Nick Saban inferred that perhaps his former assistant Lane Kiffin had his offensive calls and was stealing his calls. I just find it hilarious that Nick Saban can't seem to accept the fact that maybe his team is not as dominant as he wants it to be. But again, Alabama did survive. Number 5 Notre Dame over Florida State, 42-26. And that's really all for Week 6. Week 7, let's make our predictions for Week 7. Louisiana Lafayette, they're 3-0. This is going to be a fun game, and if you're an Iowa State fan, you are really watching this game close if you actually think that Iowa State has a chance at making a case for the playoff in a month or two, because their one loss has come to Louisiana Lafayette, but they are a top 25 team right now. But they play, let's see, 3-0 Coastal Carolina, and Louisiana Lafayette has nearly lost a couple of these games they've played. They haven't lost, but they've come close. But again, that game will be Wednesday, so tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Central Time on ESPN. These two teams combined 6-0. Friday night, SMU, number 17 in the country, on the road at Tulane, 5 p.m. on ESPN. I'm going to go Louisiana Lafayette, by the way, in that first game, but I would not be surprised to see Coastal Carolina pull off the upset. And in this game, SMU and Tulane, I will go SMU. I think the biggest thing for Iowa fans right now, and you can say it doesn't matter, I enjoy watching college football, and I enjoy rooting for a specific team. If you're an Iowa fan, to me, you root for the teams that are undefeated, or root against the teams that are undefeated. You root for the teams that are underdogs. I think you do that basically every year, and it includes before Iowa starts. I think you got to root for teams like Tulane, teams like Coastal Carolina, and teams like Houston. Houston plays BYU. Houston finally got a game in. They could not get anybody to play them because of all these outbreaks, not because of Houston, but because of their opponents. Kept having these COVID-19, I shouldn't even say outbreaks. A lot of it was contact tracing. But Houston will play number 14 BYU Friday, 8:30 p.m. Central Time on ESPN. I will go with BYU. Clemson and Georgia Tech, the number one team in the country, taking on Georgia Tech. I will go Clemson, 11 a.m. on ABC. Number 8, Cincinnati at Tulsa, 11 a.m. ESPN2. I will go Tulsa in the upset, top 10 upset. I still think teams in the top 10 are going to lose. They've proven that this year. I will go with the Tulsa Rockets. Pittsburgh at number 13, Miami, 11 a.m. ACC Network. I will go Miami. Number 15, Auburn at South Carolina, 11 a.m. ESPN. I will go Auburn. Tennessee, number 18 in the country, playing host to Kentucky, 11 a.m. on SEC Network. I'll go Kentucky in the upset. Kansas and West Virginia. I'll go West Virginia, 11 a.m. on Fox. Louisville and number 4, Notre Dame. I'll go Notre Dame, 1:30 p.m. on NBC. LSU, defending national champions, are 1-2. They're on the road at number 10, Florida, 3 p.m. ESPN. I will go with Florida. Texas A&M, number 11 in the country, on the road at Mississippi State, 3 p.m. on the SEC Network. Upset again. I'm going to go another SEC upset. I'll go Mississippi State there. Number 5, UNC, taking on FSU, 6:30 p.m. ABC. I will go with the Tar Heels. Oklahoma State-Baylor has been postponed. So Oklahoma State will not have another game before they play Iowa State. That means they haven't had a game in, 3 weeks? So, boy, that Cowboys-Cyclones game is going to be big in another week. And Iowa State has this week off, so we'll be interesting there. Vanderbilt-Missouri was also postponed. Only a couple postponements this week. That was kind of the theme last week as well. Less and less games being postponed. That's a good sign, even though COVID continues to... the numbers keep going up in so many different states. But college football keeps happening, and they're doing it safely right now for the most part, which is really good to see. Game of the week, number 3, Georgia at number 2, Alabama, 7 p.m., CBS. I have no idea here. I have no idea. I'm going to go Georgia. I'm hoping Georgia. I never root for Alabama, but I will go Georgia here. Boston College at number 23, Virginia Tech, 7 p.m., ACC Network. I am going to go with Boston College in the upset. And then again, week 8, we finally get Big Ten football back, so that will be fun. This next Sunday, I'll be joined by the Kruko boys, the infamous Kruko boys, as well as Alex Braddock. He'll be back as well, and we will talk all about Iowa football, Big Ten football, and, the season ahead. And, we'll preview Iowa basketball at some point as well. And now we have someone who has decided to come into the room and leave us with some closing thoughts. Tiana?
Hey.
All right. So that's our special guest for the week. We appreciate the listens this week, even though we're riding solo. And we'll be back next week for Tiana Brada. I'm Corey Brada. This is Brada's Branded Thoughts. Week one, number 30. That doesn't sound right, does it? Number 130. Week 130 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. And we'll be back to talk Iowa football next week. Stay safe. Keep your masks on. Let's keep this season moving. Maybe we'll get some fans in the stadium later in the year. Tiana, you got something else?
Go Hawks.